Welcome to the Fuller Tracy Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, and it's the 6th of February, and I'm recording at 6:58 p.m., and that's Greenwich Mean Time here in London. Now, that's earlier than I usually record these audios, but it is the big picture audio, so that's a little less crucial. And also, the real truth is that it's the England-Wales Six Nations rugby match, and I would like to watch that in peace. So, here we go. Just have a quick look at what's going on here in the very short term. We've had a good week of stock market rallies on Wall Street, and that's helped sentiment in some of the other markets, although not all of them. We're still getting reactions and consolidations in China and also India. But Wall Street's gone from oversold back to overbought, and it is up in the higher side of its ranges, having rallied 4 out of the last 5 days. Well, that was the case earlier today, and it's currently a little bit in the loss column, so I would hardly be surprising to see Wall Street close a little lower in here today. But overall, what can we say about stock markets here first? Well, you'll notice that there is plenty of disagreement out there, and people are everything from extremely bullish to extremely bearish. And I think it's probably not a bad idea to discount the extreme forecasts more often than not. But the uncertainty level is very, very high, and that's certainly understandable. So let's start with, for instance, Wall Street. What can we say here? Well, there's been a lot of discussion over the last week on our site, and I think that it's always perhaps appropriate to be prepared for a choppy market environment, and we have certainly seen a choppy market environment so far this year, and that could so easily continue. But are we likely to see a genuine bear market anytime soon? Now, you know, without being paranoid, we can go down lists of things that we feel could cause a more extreme downward reaction. But what could prevent the really big shakeout that most people fear? I'm not talking about a 10% plus correction or something like that. I'm talking about, could we have another bear market of the size of 2008, which Chris Benoti was forecasting? You might remember Ian Little produced some copy on that, which I discussed, and a subscriber also discussed. Well, first, I think that most bear markets occur against a background of rising interest rates, including 2008. We certainly don't have that. Interest rates remain very favorable. Yes, the QE bond buying program is no longer in play in the U.S., but they certainly haven't sold any of those bonds, and they're not likely to sell any of those bonds. We also have had reasonably good corporate profits for the most part. Corporations have been doing quite well for the most part, although in the U.S. they're facing the headwind from a strong rally or a strong dollar, and that's stronger in here today. And that's one reason why I think Wall Street is, in addition to being slightly overbought here in the short term, up near the higher side of the range, where there's psychological resistance, I think the stronger dollar is weighing a little bit on the stock market in here today. David Brown, who will be our very interesting speaker on the 23rd of February, pointed out the yield curve was not giving a bearish signal, and that's a fascinating lead indicator, and has also been discussed over the last week. But I'll put it this way: the yield curve is not indicating a problem for Wall Street. So I would expect more choppy activity, but seasonal factors are also favorable for the U.S. market. I would think I really would describe it more as a market for share pickers rather than a market where we could expect really very large moves in either direction. But my overall feeling, and I will certainly maintain this while we are not seeing any pressure, currently at any rate, on the mid-December lows. I'll give the upside the benefit of the doubt marginally, but again, the emphasis is more of a stock picker's market than what we have seen in previous years. So, what about other parts of the world? Europe's interesting, valuations are attractive. Yes, the Greece situation is dominating sentiment here in the go currently, and this can certainly go on for a while. But we also have Mario Draghi's QE. I think that's really whatever you think that's going to achieve in terms of the economy. We do know that it's and you'll get all sorts of opinions in answer to that question. But we do know that it is bullish for stock markets, not least as it's an attempt to get stock markets higher to improve confidence. And therefore, I think that Europe does look really quite interesting, and its technical action has improved since the QE program was first announced, and then given a thumbs up after some tough debate, should we say? So I think on a basis of valuations. And the number of very interesting autonomy shares in the European market, particularly within Germany, that's a reasonable prospect here for further gains in 2015 and quite possibly beyond. Looking at the Asian region. I mentioned earlier that we were seeing reactions and consolidations from some quite overextended short-term conditions in China and India. But I still think those are really exceptionally attractive. China on the basis of valuations. India, I think it's more to do with the Narendra Modi factor and also the majority election victory that he was able to achieve. Although there's some concern that he's going to lose, there are only lots of elections going on in India, but that he could lose a little bit of power in the Delhi region. In an imminent election that's coming up. I think that's helped to pull the Indian stock market a little bit lower, that uncertainty here quite recently. But I remain very, very bullish overall. I think there's I think you've got top brain in Narendra Modi. Also, you've got a great central banker, a great central banker. And Rajaram Rajan, I've garbled that, but you know what I mean. And that's certainly remains one of my top long-term favorites. Now, also, if you look through the Asian region, you do see some of the formerly called Little Tigers that are doing quite well in here. Overall, it's an area of the globe where I would expect to see the strongest growth over the medium to longer term. And I think I will certainly be maintaining an overweight equity position in all probability in that Asia Pacific region. Among the general concerns, a lot of talk about deflation, and were we going to see the Japanization of the rest of the world? Well, we certainly have a lot of deflationary pressures in the European region. The QE is certainly a tactic to try to stave that off. Overall, though, and I've said in a number of audios and also written copy, that we have to be careful to differentiate between what is the Japan-style deflation that we saw really from the 1990 bubble bursting and on downwards to the deflation that's being caused by technology, which is mostly a positive deflation, mostly a very positive deflation. And this is the advance of the machines and the additional efficiency that they're actually creating in just about every industry going. That does lower costs, it increases efficiency. The downside of it in of the technology is just that it can replace jobs faster than new jobs can be created, and that's why unemployment problems have lingered for longer in a number of countries. But unless you feel that we're going to slide into a serious, sustained global negative deflation, and I do not feel that way, then I feel quite strongly that stock markets are the best place to be. And yes, of course, they'll be volatile, and we want to be careful when markets are clearly overextended relative to their 200-day moving averages. And I think we do better or are likely to certainly have a safer portfolio if we try to pick out the value where we can. So moving on from stock markets, and on that very, very same point, here, are we going to see deflation? And how much of it is actually going to be a destructive deflation? Takes me on to the global bond markets. And the yields that we're seeing here are, for the most part, incredibly low. And that is unsustainable, in my opinion, unless you feel that there's just never going to be another period of sustained economic growth, and I don't believe that for a minute. Now, bond investors have done extremely well, I think, due to a savvy appreciation of what has been taking place over the last 32 years, and also perhaps with some luck here in the last few years. I mean, the QE has certainly helped to push those bond yields lower. But suffice it to say, the bond investors are still gaining from a real a total real return. In other words, you take the interest rate payments that are received plus the actual price action, and they're still winning. And I tip my hat to them. But as these interest rates get closer to zero, Surely the long-term risks are increasing unless you feel that negative deflation is going to rule indefinitely, and I do not. So I do regard the bond sector as quite risky. If it's yield that you want, I would not be going into junk bonds for that yield. I would be going into equities, which have a well-covered attractive yield. And it's not that difficult to find quite a few equities around the globe which are yielding 4 to 5% or more in well-covered dividends. Looking elsewhere, in terms of currencies, we've seen more currency volatility. We've got the strong US dollar in here. We certainly know, and I've been talking about this a lot in audios and well over the last few months, that this is an increasing headwind for the US economy. It also makes America an attractive destination because investors like to be or like to have money in a currency that is appreciating. That's certainly understandable. But I think it's one of the problems that Wall Street's been experiencing here this year to date. And Wall Street is barely up on the year. It's up just less than a percentage point, less than half a percentage point for 2015 to date. Whereas most of the European stock markets are showing moderate gains of anywhere from 1 to 3.5%. That's Germany at the 3.5%, and most of the Asian markets are also higher despite the recent pullbacks. So, currency headwind here, and I think the Fed appears to be relaxed about it so far. They'll obviously be paying close attention to this, but I find it very unlikely that we will see the that we will see interest rates raised in mid-year, which seems to be the consensus view at this stage still. And if I'm wrong on that, then that's likely to encourage more people to push into the US dollar, and I think that could take a toll on the stock market. Now, to try to put this dollar strength in perspective, it's come off a very low base, and you could say that over the last 30 years, there'd been a very sort of choppy overall downward trend for the US dollar. But it did rise very rapidly off that extremely low base, and it's the speed which of that move upwards which can so easily cause problems. There are questions about whether it will also cause problems for some other countries that maybe are overextended in terms of dollar borrowing. We haven't seen any of that surface so far, but that remains a risk here going forward. Among other currencies, and again, emphasize we have seen this greater volatility over the last 6 months and more. And we've certainly seen considerable weakness in the euro. That's at 1.13 in here today, a bit softer here today. I think that certainly the European Central Bank, Mario Draghi, would like to see a soft euro overall. And I would not be certainly would not be ruling out the possibility of a little bit further euro weakness, particularly if the dollar continues remain generally firm as well. So those are real prospects. We've seen a number of the Asia Pacific currencies also weaken somewhat, not all of them. It's interestingly, the Indian rupee remains really quite firm. But the Asia Pacific region generally has seen sharp lowering of currencies, and that includes the Australian dollar, which has helped to give the Australian stock market a big boost to the upside. And in mentioning the Australian dollar, we know that Australia has a very important resources sector, and the resources currencies, and Australia is not exclusively a resource of resources producer, obviously, but it's a diversified economy. But we do see where we have the primarily resource-producing countries that they have very, very soft currencies, and I don't see that changing here anytime soon. Now, what about these commodity markets overall? Oil's been really the big story here overall. Technically, you will know that the downward trends for WTI and Brent crude, of which Brent is, that's the really important one. But they've lost their downtrend consistency. We saw a 20% plus rally, which some people said immediately, well, that's a bull market, isn't it? Well, I think we certainly had some aggressive short covering. I think there's too much oil supply around, and we know that we can read that almost daily in the press, and also people talking about the probability that ships would actually be loaded with oil additionally. So there's a lot of supply, put it this way, there's a lot of supply around. But this is really more of a supply story than a demand story. Demand for oil is not rapacious the way it might be if we had a synchronized global economic recovery, and we're a long way from that. But the actual demand for crude oil has continued to edge gradually higher. It's just that the supply has increased, and one of the major factors behind that, or the major factor behind that, is of course U.S. fracking. And the low oil prices that we see will certainly put a lid on most of that U.S. fracking. But this is an industry that can be opened up again very, very quickly, and it just really takes a little more than a couple of months to restart the fracking projects. And that's exactly what will happen if we get a surprisingly strong rally in crude oil prices. Meanwhile, that's going to be, I mean, oil is quite weak, and I think that it's likely to stay mostly below this $50 level for I think at least a few more months, and that will cause plenty of angst in oil producing countries. And while a number of commentators, including myself, have said that the big drop in oil prices benefits all countries that are not oil exporters themselves, it benefits all consumers. But the benefits are spread very thinly among the populations at large, whereas the problems caused by the lower oil price very quickly, as we've seen with Russia, as we've seen with Venezuela, and there are plenty of other and there are certainly problems that we're seeing now in the U.S. shale industry. And that has helped to hold the U.S. stock market in check this year as well. So, but again, overall, I think that it's remains a net plus factor here for the global economy. And if you think back to 1987, the biggest factor that got far less attention than, of course, all the financial scandals, it's a much better story, but the spike in crude oil in early 2008 up to over $147 for Brent crude. Every spike in of that nature in crude oil prices, and that was the highest one, has resulted in global recession, and that's actually what we saw. Okay, what about some of these other commodities here? Industrial metals. Well, again, they're they've been under pressure from first a decline in demand, but also the miners, particularly the bigger international miners, have benefited enormously from the accelerating rate of technological innovation. And that has meant that they've been able to produce more efficiently. So the oversupply has not cleared quickly enough to, if at all, to enable prices to recover from these comparatively depressed levels that we are actually seeing. This problem, I think, is not going to end all that quickly. If we look at the precious metal sector, and there's certainly a lot of interest in that, I think that overall we see more evidence, tentative evidence, not conclusive evidence, but more evidence of base formation development than we do of distribution prior to another slump to the downside. And I notice those aggressive investment bank leveraged traders, well, they've kind of gone quiet on the forecasts of gold going down to $1,000 and $800 is that we were hearing a few months ago and all of last year. So, in an environment where we have tentative evidence of base formation development, how to play it, well, don't pay up for anything. But when they get oversold on those stochastic indicators and fall back into regions of prior support, that's when they offer speculative opportunities for those who are actually in this, interested in dealing in these precious metals. But they're very much trading vehicles here. We certainly don't have any sustainable trends, certainly not to the upside. They have yet to be established. And but are interesting. I nibbled a little bit of silver here today. I couldn't resist. I think I picked it up down around the just below the 1660 level. Now, agricultural commodities benefited from generally favorable crops. You will recall that we went through what seemed like almost a biblical 7 years of bad crop cycles. But last year was net favorable overall. There were obvious exceptions in areas, big drought in California, for instance. But overall, in terms of staple grains, prices are low today, and for most, the majority of agricultural commodities, these are not expensive. I mean, that's good, particularly for poorer countries here overall. But the big variable in agricultural commodities is always in terms of supply, and that is in the hands of the weather gods more often than not. But I would say the background for these crops is agricultural commodities is favorable for the most part. But of course, low prices in developing countries can have tragic consequences for farmers in those regions. Indian farmers have certainly been suffering from the low prices for cotton. Cotton, for instance. Now, let's try to weigh it all up and just wrap on this. And I think that expect, as I mentioned earlier on, expect stock market volatility, but I still think that there are many attractive opportunities in global stock markets. I'm certainly not thinking of rushing into cash. I'm maintaining a fully invested equity position. And I think if we look have a little fun and just conclude looking at the long-term outlook, I think stock markets are well positioned for a secular, as in very long-term, trend to the upside. And we had one of these, which started a little after the end of World War II, and valuations were really quite depressed. That was very had a secular bull market, which carried into the mid-1960s. Then another long, rangy, choppy, often scary period. Some of you may remember the 73-74 bear market, which for some people felt that was the end of the world. And then we got another big secular bull market starting in 1982, which really ended with the end of this the last of the end of the last century. And we've had a choppy, turbulent period, 2000 bear market, the 2008 bear market, a lot of choppy activity, slow growth. And I think that's setting us up nicely for another secular bull market. I won't feel comfortable in saying that this is a reality until we get back to a normalization of interest rates, and we're obviously a few years away from that yet. But it's out there to be looked forward to. And the drivers, you'll be familiar with this, so I'll be very quick. The big one, the really big driver, is the accelerated rate of technological innovation. I mean, so much comes from that spin-off. And then the other really, really big one is lower energy prices in real terms. And of course, that's being achieved with the help of the accelerated rate of technological innovation, which creates more renewables, brings more oil out of the ground, all the fracking potential that we have seen and that we still have. And that's very favorable. Then the fact that really the vast, overwhelming majority of countries are run on on a capitalist economic system. That was certainly not the case back in 1982, when that last secular bull market was actually beginning. We have a larger population, bigger global middle class. This has been good for the autonomies, and you know, we remain very big fans of those corporate autonomies, these big, incredibly successful multinational companies that are doing so much better on average than their respective home economies. And that situation is going to continue, in my view. And on that note, I want to wish you a very happy, peaceful, and enjoyable weekend. All the very best.